Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
For this podcast, getting John Sunvold on is pretty much as good as it gets. Nobody knows basketball like the former Missouri standout and nine-year NBA star. It's hard to find anybody that's been better at business, as he's built a crazy successful financial advisory firm. And he's pretty much the best college basketball television analyst in America. SEC Network is lucky to have Sunvold, as he simply doesn't want the grind of a big-time network TV gig, which he used to have. Later, you'll find out the only thing he regrets about leaving big-time TV. But this man has found a much more interesting life. John Sunvold was pretty much drafted to become a University of Missouri curator. And then the governor wouldn't take no for an answer, and Sunvold answered the call to be the leader of the board of curators. He's a scratch golfer, his family is rock solid, and he loves his home state. He's also the kind of man that just offers up, without being asked, that he's a registered Republican. That should tell you right there just how comfortable he is being John Sunvold. For this podcast, which is about sports, politics, and life, who could possibly be a better guest? This is the episode you want to recommend to your friend, and there's a big surprise near the end when I bring up something nobody else has brought up before. I don't know if he was more surprised with the question or if I'm more surprised that he'd never been asked about it before. I don't like my own voice very much, but even I'm going to listen to this podcast. It's brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Customers at Roberts Robinson say we just make it easy. Ask for Mike on the showroom floor. And don't forget the pre-owned department. They got a lot of great pre-owned cars there, and they can help you, whatever your budget is, get into a good, safe ride. You can find those as well at robertsrobinson.com, where you can shop, click, and drive. The service center is award-winning. If your car needs some service, even routine maintenance, don't be afraid to call them up at Roberts Robinson. They will come get your car, take it back, service it, and bring it back to you. It's a free service. It's Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC. They truly are amazing. Online at robertsrobinson.com. Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building systems, make your building great again. They specialize in retrofitting your HVAC control system. It takes about 2 to 4 years to get all your money back and then massive savings after that. Now, if you don't want to make the investment up front, they also have a consulting service that they will come to your building and take a look at how you're using all of your energy and help you use it more wisely, just with everything that you have. When they save you money, and they will save you money, they get a cut of what they save you. That's it. No cost on your part, only savings for you and a percentage for them. It's really simple. Find out more at EliteAutomate.com or call 913-766-2188 for Elite Automation online at EliteAutomate.com. Back9Development.com. That's back, the numeral 9, development.com. A licensed general contractor. They specialize in custom building. They'll build you a new home. They'll help you with your business or your remodel. For more information, you can contact TJ, the owner at Back 9 Development, 785-236-0161. Again, TJ is part of the family here and kind of thinks and works and acts like you and I do. And that's the big, really important part of the sponsors of this podcast. If you know they're on board, you know you've got something in common with them right there. Go to the website, back9development.com. It's the numeral 9, back9development.com, and check out his new condominium project in Manhattan. The Solheim at Grand Mirror Condominiums, from $249,000 and up, 1 and 2 bedroom. These are upscale condominiums that you can use for game weekends, but maybe VRBO them out yourself or use them for your college kids or a second home for you. It's a great investment opportunity. They're just now starting to build these. If you'd like to go check out the site or get on the list, just call TJ. It doesn't take any money, no commitment, no anything. Just call TJ, and he'll be more than happy to talk with you about it. 785-236-0161 or online at back9development.com for the Solheim Condominiums at Grand Mirror on the Colbert Hills Golf Course. John Sunvold is the perfect guest for Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Sports, politics, life. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Buck Roofing presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Our conversation is with John Sunvold. We have known each other a long, long time to talk a lot of basketball and a lot of other things through the years. And today it is all about the NCAA tournament. It's Missouri Tigers getting ready to play the Oklahoma Sooners on Saturday evening, and maybe the whole field. He does great work with the SEC Network, and he joins us now on the podcast. Mr. Sunvold, how are you, sir?
Kevin, I'm doing great, and it is, man, it's a treat to be back on with you, and I always enjoy your work, so it's fun that we get to do what we used to do before, huh?
Thank you very much. Nice of you to say. What do you do with all your time now that you're not the the head of the board of curators at Mizzou?
So I'm back to, I still have Sunvold Financial, so that's my business. 12 employees that we manage money. So that's number one. And two was the broadcasting, as you mentioned, but I'm done. The tournaments are all done as far as SEC, and my schedule's done. So back to the normal, and I wait for good weather and drier weather than it is right now to start golfing. that's my next step to get back on the golf course.
But,
not too bad.
That sounds really good. I like to talk about things on the podcast other than just what we're having you on for, and we'll get to basketball in a moment. But I thought we'd spend a moment or two, if you could share your experience as a competitor in your life, be it high school, college, the NBA, competing every day in basketball, being the very best that you could be, and how that transitioned or translated to your life after basketball, because there's very few people. I know we talked through the years about a lot of the things that you do and have done with your business, with the board of curators, with the things that you do. What did you learn from sports, and how much did that help you when you got out into other careers?
You know, great question. I think the first thing what sports brings is, if you're good, the first thing I would think is discipline. You've got to be committed on a daily basis if you want to play at the best level. The best high school players are disciplined. Then you make that step to collegiate, for me, basketball. And depending on what level of athlete you are, I fortunately got to play Division I. That's a giant step. Then you go to the next one. You know, the NBA is even the greatest of all steps. But so the first thing I thought about, if I go backwards and think, okay, what sports give me? It was a discipline. Discipline on a daily basis to get the work done in order to get better. The other parts would be preparation. How do you prepare on a daily basis to be better at your craft? So let's go back and think. When I was in the NBA, I played 9 years. I'm gonna say I'm about my fourth or fifth year, I thought, well, this won't last forever. I'm very fortunate it's lasted 2 or 3 or 4 years. I was a finance major, so I started studying what I would like to build when I was done. What was it going to look like? How it was going to look? So, again, to prepare further ahead and to be disciplined while I was in the NBA to somehow vision the business that I wanted to run, that my name was on the door. So those are things really sports gives you. If you take a day off in sports, literally a day, I think, as an athlete, it sets you back a few days. So no different than you know, I got out, now all of a sudden you run the business. The way you walk in life, how you carry yourself, would I have ever thought that a governor of the state of Missouri would call me and say, I want to see you in my office? And you think, well, why would a governor call me? You know, Governor Nixon called me. He was a Democrat. I'm a registered Republican. But, you know, I walk in and I listen to his people tell me about me, that they've watched me over the years, and the reason why they wanted me on the board of curators. And so I tie all that back and think, okay, from a discipline standpoint of how you live your life, how your walk is, how prepared are you for other things, I think that's the biggest thing that athletics does. It just puts you in a mindset that it's hard work. Everything's hard work. Nothing's easy. There's highs, there's lows, there's ups, there's downs. I think honest athletes would tell you you probably fail more than you win, which that's normal. Especially the higher level, the higher you go, the more failure you're going to hit. How do you react to it, right? How do you react to anything that happens, good or bad? And most people would describe me as being kind of an even keel guy, not too high, not too low. Well, that's, you know, I probably came from athletics. There's no sense celebrating because there's another game next week or 2 days from now. So don't get too high. And if you get beat, go back to work. We're going to drag it out and grind it out. So, same thing in business, same thing with family, same thing with being a dad, you know, the highs and lows, you try to level it out, teach your kids, Same with thing when I was asked to be a curator. I thought, I've known nothing about it, but let me dig in. How do I help the university? How do I help from my angle? I don't know all angles, so I'm going to listen most of the time. I'm going to speak very little. And the more you know, then you finally kind of get your groove in anything. But you never really quit. I don't think as an athlete, you're maybe certain people get satisfied. I know the guys I play with in the NBA were never satisfied, just never. And I'm the same way. I wish I could be. I wish I could always take a break with my mind and say, okay, slow down. But it just isn't me. It's just, you're cranked that way and you're made that way. So that's how it's gone.
Well, the SEC Network is so lucky to have you doing the games. And I know that, you know, you could work for the networks and maybe make it a 365-day-a-year deal, and that's not where you are in your life, nor have you been there for a while. And you're an honest guy. You run a business, and you have a lot of people that do a lot of the heavy lifting for you, and you run the business that allows you to get out on the golf course in the afternoons when the weather gets good and things like that, which is where you are in life. But as you were climbing and you were dedicated every single day, and you said, okay, I've got to be the best player I can be, and then I've got to start this business and do everything I can. I know what that's like. A lot of the people who listen to this podcast know what that is like. There's a lot of small business owners and managers that listen to this podcast. I'm curious. I love follow-up questions because I heard you say that, and I was thinking about a podcast I did a couple weeks ago. I won't even implicate you in this in any way because I watched two games back-to-back involving three coaches that are all, I think, 70 or older. And I was completely unimpressed with their teams. They're big-name coaches. And I was watching going, wow, this just isn't the same. I want to ask you as a basketball man, can you identify older coaches now in college basketball that you think are kind of phoning it in?
Yeah, I mean, yes. And I say it not in a bad way. I think the game, the rules have changed. The game has changed. Not the rules of the game, but the rules of how the game is played, how a college coach has to coach versus when I was playing. Or Kevin, you're close to my age. You're a little bit younger, but how our age used to view coaches and players. So, and this goes against this, what I'm going to say is against what most people say about athletes should be paid. I think the Division I, I'm talking Division I, men's basketball, men's football, they control the narrative. They are well compensated by not only getting an education from unbelievable universities, the food, everything they get. Where it's changed for coaches is the limited hours you can coach. I think back when I played, Norm Stewart had unlimited hours with us, not that he used them, but unlimited hours with us to make sure something was right. And now it's limited. So when it's limited, that coach has to fine tune his practices to maybe something it doesn't, he'd rather spend other time on. So when that doesn't happen, all of a sudden you're looking at teams that play a game that the offense is simpler than it used to be. Mid-majors run more offensive sets. High majors run more, I'm going to drive the ball, I'm going to kick the ball. We're going to shoot a three. If you don't have it, you drive the ball, you kick the ball. And if it gets down to 10 seconds, we're going to do a high pick and roll, right? The pick and roll, it was never part of the game of the high pick and roll in the collegiate world. I call it the Chris Paul rule. Chris Paul was a fabulous collegiate player and one of the great NBA players now. Chris Paul is probably the best ever on the pick and roll. That's what everybody runs. Now, what I'd like to tell, and I don't tell many college coaches, you don't have Chris Paul out front. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you have a player that could be a pro in the pick and roll. If you watch college basketball, you know, you could put Ayo Dosunmu from Illinois out front, and he's going to make unbelievable plays. For the most part, most teams don't have that, but that's what everybody runs. And because it's easier to run something where you rely on a kid making a one-on-one move than to run an integrated cut, pass, read, react system that many mid-majors can run because they have their kids there 3 and 4 years. They have them there longer. Division I schools, no matter where you are, if you're good, you probably have a freshman, maybe there a year or two. You've got to go get a grad transfer for a year. You can't complicate it. And I think coaches have less time And then the next part is the tougher you are as a coach, hopefully you have a reputation that the guy will stick around, because kids can transfer. If you read, and I get to read because I do games, on these kids where they come out of high school, some will play for three high schools. And then why would it be surprised if after his freshman year he wants to transfer? I mean, it's a different game, and coaches have to be different. So it's not, I don't think it's that coaches have checked out, even the older ones. I just think they've got to do it differently than they used to do it. And I think it bugs them that they can't be, I'm not going to say it's tough, they can't be as demanding as they would like to be. Some guys still can because they've earned it, but that's a very, very few of them.
All right. The other follow-up is this. I heard you say you played 9 years in the NBA. We all know that. And I know that you were a leader and a great teammate. And then you offered up without being asked that you're a registered Republican. So I'm going to combine these two here, Sonny, and ask you a personal question. How many times have you said to your wife or your buddies, man, I'm glad I'm not playing the NBA right now because I don't know what I'd do? have you thought that? I mean, seriously, like you were a team leader and stuff, and you got all these teams with the politics is so involved in the NBA, and it's very far left, and it's pretty clear who's driving the bus. LeBron James is the head of the thing. What would you do now? What would you do if you were on one of these teams playing now? Have you thought about that?
Well, that would be the crazy part, but I'm going to say, I'll be honest too, when the check came on the 1st and the 15th of each month, I probably would have been okay.
Yeah.
I probably would have said, I'm okay. You know, but I was, the locker room was always a place of great discussion. I would be interested at the discussions today, because as a player, I would have been heavily involved in the discussion today. No different than, you know, when I played in the 80s, the discussion in the locker room was always interesting. Obviously, race has always been an issue in the world. And when you're in a game with black and white players in a locker room, but for the most part, those people got along because they were teammates.
Right.
You might not like somebody personally, but when you're on the floor and you're battling practice, you know, the discussions in the locker room, I always thought were quite fascinating. And I'm sure they are today. The problem you have today is if you speak from a conservative side, you're probably going to get canceled or whatever they want to term
what?
That.
So, come on. I've never heard of that.
There you go. So you'd probably have to tiptoe through a few of the things, but you know, I think no matter what day and age, I thought the locker room was a great place for discussion when I was playing. And again, I'll go back when we talked earlier, when I had my first couple of years in the NBA, I listened a lot. I didn't really open my mouth. But then when you're established and you're in the league a little bit, and really your walk of life, I mean, I was looked at, you know, by some of the players. I mean, they kind of make fun. I remember Miami. What was the show? Family Ties. Was that with Michael J. Fox?
Yeah.
So I was Alex B. Keaton, because I'm reading the Wall Street Journal, right? So I'm sitting in the airport. So the guys would laugh about it. But it became, you know, so the discussions were always interesting based on how someone thought of you as a person. Not as a player out on the floor, we're going to go out, we're going to play, you know, your teammates. But off the floor, there was a wide variety of discussion between how guys grew up, where they grew up, what their family's like, what they believe in, why would you want to pay lower taxes versus higher taxes? I mean, the whole thing would come up in locker room. And I thought it was fascinating because everybody was from a different walk of life.
Do you think that occurs now? And if so, I don't think that's what they're talking about. I think they're talking about other issues in there. That's just my opinion. But do you think it is like that now? Because from the outside, me looking at it, I'm certainly no expert at all on the NBA or what goes on there. And I know that yours is college basketball now. But most NBA teams look like one player is kind of in charge and everybody else falls into line.
Yeah, it appears that way. I don't know. It appears that way. The league is way younger than it was when I was there. So everything is younger. So that sometimes that makes a veteran player, one player, the dominant voice. But I would guarantee if you dig deeper, there's a voice that is the voice that the media wants to talk to. But there's other voices that would roll their eyes at the one voice talking. That's just normal because they're all competitive. And so I'm saying, as LeBron is talking and saying what he wants to say, I'll bet there's three or four guys rolling their eyes in the background thinking, yeah, same old stuff. I mean, I'm just These guys are competitive and they have their own thoughts and feelings. I think what happened with Trump as president, when you have coaches that got involved more in the politics, Steve Kerr, who's a friend of mine, or Popovich at San Antonio, you know, when those things came out, the media is going to gravitate towards that, and especially that side of politics. Media is going to gravitate towards that and give them more of the platform. But I promise you, there's enough coaches rolling their eyes about those two guys too. Just, it's just natural because every one of those people in those positions have big egos. They're competitive, and they probably just don't say a lot. They just sit back and think it.
Wow. Okay, let's move on to some college basketball. John, we got the tournament coming up here, and Missouri draws Oklahoma, and they don't play exactly the same way, but their seasons were almost mirror images. These teams both got to the top 10 a few weeks ago, and then it didn't end well. We don't need to focus on Oklahoma, but I'm curious about your thoughts on the Tigers and how this happened, because you know, we were just a few weeks ago talking about them maybe being a 3 seed and they wind up a 9. Did they just not improve or did they regress? What do you think happened here with Mizzou?
Oh, man. It's hard to say. They can be so good when they're good. Obviously, their wins early are everybody knows it. And they can have halves where they're still that team. This year against Mississippi State, on the road, maybe the best half they played. I'm watching it. And they go from up 14 in the second half to lose by 15, a 29-point turnaround. And you can't quite pinpoint it. I do know this. If they play well, if they're hitting on all cylinders, and what would I mean? I would say they can't turn the ball over, right? Don't make silly mistakes. Get some better quality shots. Not everybody shoot it when they get a chance. Just get quality stuff. And if Pinson, to me, is driving the bus, if Pinson plays great, I think Missouri can play with anybody. Now, that's a weird statement because of how they ended. But they proved that. Illinois, Oregon, Wichita State, Alabama. I mean, these are teams they beat. Arkansas they beat. If they've got it right. Now, what is it when they get wrong? I've already said, sometimes they make too many mistakes. Don't handle the basketball. If Pinson plays only so-so, and Conjo's pulling him out of the game and putting bugs in, they're not the same team. Pinson can break down a defense. Smith, who's an all-league player, doesn't break down a defense. So you need Pinson on the floor. For Missouri fans, Mark Smith, if he could make two or three threes, before they played South Carolina, I had that game. I was talking to Frank Martin, everybody's good friend, everybody knows. And Frank said, you know, the guy besides Pinson, they all worried about Pinson, the coaches, who could beat us, who can beat you, is Mark Smith can make 4 or 5 threes. Now, there weren't many games he did that. South Carolina was one that he did. I think Mark Smith has gotten to the fact that everybody's called him a shooter, so he's more worried about, I'm going to ball fake, I'm going to put it on the floor and show people. Well, past one dribble, it's not pretty. It's just not what he does. And I was taught by my coach many years ago, do what you do well, right? Stay away from the stuff you don't do well. So if he doesn't have a shot, then don't force something. We all know that Tillman's had a good year. If he doesn't get in foul trouble, and he really hasn't gotten foul trouble. So it's a team that they're going to match up well against Oklahoma. We know Lon Kruger's a fabulous coach, and OU's got guys who can shoot it, and they're athletic, and they can guard. I think, and this is crazy, I think if Missouri can win that game, I'm guessing Gonzaga, and everybody in the country will say, well, Gonzaga's got an easy road. I think Missouri can play Gonzaga. I think Missouri's a team that can play because their guards are so good defensively, they meaning Missouri's guards. They'll be the best guard core that Gonzaga's played against defensively that can guard guys. And Missouri can rebound. Again, they've got to play the kind of game they played against Illinois where they're just good. I find the second round interesting. I think Missouri can win. I know that's crazy, but I've seen the good Missouri. I've seen the bad one, but I've seen the good one. And I tend to look at teams, how good can they be when they get it together? And if they You know, you got a week of practice, and you get, and they get that first game with Oklahoma. If you get by that one, no, I'm not guaranteeing they'll get by Oklahoma, but I just think Missouri is good enough to do some real damage in this tournament.
Well, let me try to put this in perspective for some of the folks listening. I think Missouri's the good Missouri that you're talking about. Their best wins make them a three seed. I mean, they're legitimate.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
The teams they've beaten.
Right.
I think their best game beats Kansas still. And Kansas is a three, and Missouri's a nine. So I agree with you if they play their best game. And it's the most befuddling thing ever for fans, I know. And I know Missouri fans get frustrated that, man, why did this have to become a yo-yo? It was going along so well. We're ranked seventh in the country or whatever. And then it just becomes so difficult against some lesser teams. But I agree with you on that front. Does that make the trickier part getting past Oklahoma? Because I have no doubt if they beat Oklahoma, Missouri's going to come out and just play their tails off against Gonzaga. I think Oklahoma would probably do the same thing. You know, I think it's tough to be a one seed sometimes in this tournament. But what about specifically the Oklahoma game? How do they avoid the trap of not playing their very best?
Well, the best thing for Missouri is that it says Oklahoma, right? It doesn't say, it doesn't say Western Kentucky, right? It doesn't say whatever other name. I mean, Oklahoma is a big enough name. Missouri played them last year and got beat by them in Kansas City in the Hall of Fame Classic back in November. So I that's the best part, is that there's a name. It isn't someone that you think you'll just get past.
St. Bonaventure.
Correct. Yeah. And I know, here's what fans don't realize this as much as maybe a former player. Coaches never look by a team because they're nervous about every game. They're nervous about everything. It's like when Kansas played UTEP at the end of the year and barely beat them. I'll promise you those players knew nothing about UTEP. Listen as the coaches barked about, hey, here's a scout report. These guys can play. Kids are 20 years old. They're not listening. I mean, you'd like them to listen, but it's just not. So, again, it's not St. Bonnie. It's Oklahoma. All Conzo has to do is turn on the film from last year. He can go through and show that Oklahoma beat three top 10 teams in 1 week. I mean, he'll have their attention. That doesn't mean Missouri will win. Oklahoma, we've seen the good Oklahoma. And when they're good, they're really good too, because they've got shooters and they got quickness of guards. The game I go back is when Oklahoma played Alabama in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And Alabama's really good. And Oklahoma physically pushed them around, shoved them around, took the ball from them early, built a good league. Alabama came back, but Oklahoma won. And again, I think that gives a reality to a Missouri team that, okay, we'll get, you know, we've got to play our best to get to that next game. Let's not worry about that game. We've got to play our best to get past Oklahoma.
Okay, and so we talked about Gonzaga, and if they play Gonzaga in the second game, of course, that would be fascinating. And I'm not sitting here rooting for Gonzaga early. I will late. I mean, Missouri and KU are in their way right now. So, I do think if Gonzaga gets the Final Four, I'll root for them to win this thing. I think they do things the right way, and it would be good for college basketball for a program like Gonzaga to finally get that done. I just think that would be good for the game. But it's not as easy as people think. Why do people think that, okay, Gonzaga's 26-0, they're just definitively the very best, April 5th, they're going to hold the trophy. And I'm not saying that they won't or they can't, but this tournament is really hard. Are you of the belief that Gonzaga is a massive favorite in this thing, or do you view it every year that even if you're the best team and everyone knows it, it is incredibly hard to win this thing?
Well, I think it's incredibly hard. I obviously wasn't successful in my 4 years of playing. I think Gonzaga is the favorite, but if I was a betting man, I think I'd take the field only because it's just too hard. No one's going undefeated. They're not better than the Kentucky team from a few years back that was undefeated all the way until the championship game. I mean, they're not that good. What hurts Gonzaga normally is that their league doesn't prepare them playing two games a week for what athletic teams you're going to have in the tournament. Now, let's go backwards. Gonzaga will play anybody, anywhere, anytime. I had Gonzaga a year ago at A&M. I know Mark Few. We sat down and talked. Because I basically said, you're one of the blue bloods of college basketball. And he laughed. I said, no, well, think about it. Year in, year out. And he said, hey, we'll play anybody. Because they have to early to see where they are, you know, on their barometer. Where are they? And this year when you beat Iowa, you know, they've got a schedule. And you go, okay, they've beaten some of these teams. But now you get into a league that doesn't play to their level. Sure, BYU was close, had them down double figures the last game they played them. But it's not the same thing. The athletes at BYU aren't the athletes from Missouri or Alabama or Tennessee. So the tough part for Gonzaga will be to make some adjustments. The best thing for Gonzaga is I think they had three guys on the first two-team All-American team this year, the AP team that just came out. So of 10 guys, I think three of them were Gonzaga players. I mean, they're fabulously talented. They've got a kid, Andrew Nembhard, who came from Florida as a transfer guard, who's really good that I got to see for, I think he played 2 years before he transferred at Florida. So they have what it takes. They, to me, are the best team. But can you win six games? Can you get through everybody? Can you take everybody's best shot? And can, let's just say it's Missouri, or if it's Oklahoma, can you take Missouri's very best shot when your game's not at its very best? And I would probably say no. If Gonzaga gets Missouri's best shot or Oklahoma's best shot and the Zags are 70% of what they should play, then they'll lose. And that's the tough part for them. Not that they haven't been great. I'm with you, Kevin. If they play my alma mater and they beat them, I'd love to see the Zags go all the way. I'd like to see an undefeated team. I think that'd be terrific for college basketball. It'd be great for Gonzaga, you know, their private little school, Spokane, Washington. They could celebrate, but I think it would be, I think it's going to be hard. I just think one of these games, if they don't play their best and someone at that level plays their best, I think the Zags can lose.
John, I've spoken with a lot of people that like Alabama coming out of the East to possibly be a Final Four team. You've seen them a lot. You know a lot about Alabama. Rate their chances of getting to the Final Four, and should the seeds hold, they would then play Gonzaga in the Final Four. Do they have what it takes to knock off the Zags?
Yeah, that would be a tough game for Alabama because they don't match up. Some of the size of Gonzaga would hurt Alabama. Alabama is a fast team. They score. If people haven't seen them, basically they either shoot layups or three-pointers. No mid-range shots. They don't want them. Nate Oates doesn't like them. He's a high school math teacher, you know, 10 years ago, and now he's a coach of the year in the SEC. They drive the ball hard to the rim. If they don't have it, they kick out and shoot threes. And that's all documented offensively what they do. Defensively, that's where the defense is where they've been really good, where he's made a change. He's got great athletes, and they really guard, and they're deep. Where they would lack against a team like Gonzaga might be size. Gonzaga's got some dudes now that play tough and physical around the rim. Alabama would want it to be somewhat of a track meet, but so the Zags like that too. I think it'd be a tough. It'd be fun to watch. Alabama's good enough. Alabama is good enough to get there. They do rely on the three ball, and I would say this: the NCAA tournament is fine because you only play, you know, you play one game and then you wait a day and play another game. I thought it may catch them in the SEC tournaments 3 days in a row. They were great every game. They were great every game. Their shooters shot it. They have enough shooters. The legs weren't tired in 3 days. I thought, okay, if they handled that, then six games over the two or three weeks, that's not going to bother them. So, yeah, I like Alabama. If they played the Zags in the Final Four, I'd probably take Gonzaga just because of the size factor.
6 weeks ago, I would have, in ink, written Baylor down for the Final Four. I will not do so now. They're just a little too psycho for me since their COVID brush. I thought they got well, but then they didn't, and I'm a little jaded here watching them take a 39-minute game to the final moment against Kansas State in the Big 12 tournament. Didn't do anything to make me think Baylor's finally arrived and this is going to be their year that they blow us away. I think their second game, you know, listen, they're going to play North Carolina or Wisconsin their second game. I'm not going to guarantee Baylor's winning that game. My point of all this is, as we talk about other SEC teams, Arkansas is the three in that region. Are they good enough to get to the Final Four? And how do you look at the ones? Is it good to be in Baylor's? I think Baylor's a wild card personally. Isn't it good to be in their region right now?
Yeah, but here's the thing about their losses. Obviously, they had two, and you mentioned the COVID. Most teams struggled out of COVID all year long when they came back because you couldn't practice. And practice was, it was either individual practices or you could have two guys go or you could have four guys over here go. When they came back, they lost a game to Kansas. They didn't play great against Kansas State, but I think back, I think of the league like this, and this is what Mike Anderson, now coach of St. John's of Arkansas, former Missouri coach, he always said playing in conference was like playing with family. Like when you're playing with your brothers or whatever, they know each other so well. So when you get through a league and you have Baylor coming back around to play everybody the second time, now K-State the third time, games are going to be closer. It's just human nature, you know, everything about each other. Baylor still has the three guards that if I think across the board, most experts would say you'd love to have a good backcourt, a veteran backcourt. Well, some people, they get one veteran good player. Some get two. They've got three. And I find it almost impossible that one of the three will have a good game. Mm-hmm. That one of those three guys will play well on one of those nights. So that's one of the reasons I like Baylor, because they've got guys that are really, really good and they're old. But that thing, you go back to Arkansas. Arkansas is capable, but I look at it like a second round matchup. Let's say Arkansas and Texas Tech. Man, that's a dogfight. Two different style teams. Usually in the tournament, the scoring is down a little bit. It becomes a possession game. And we know Texas Tech is great at possession games. Arkansas is a team that won their last 11 conference games in a row, which is almost impossible to do, but they did it. They're deep. They've got a freshman named Moses Moody he'll be a top 10 draft pick. Fabulous guard. But they're deep and they've got players. But that second round matchup with Tech would be phenomenal. I look at a team like Ohio State in that thing, number two seeded. It's a fascinating one because you just mentioned Baylor, if they play Carolina or Wisconsin, man, that's a hard game.
It is.
But I still think Baylor's the best team out of there. I think the further they get past the COVID, which they are, every week's another week, then they might get back to, again, when you get out of your league, teams just don't know how to play and prepare for you like others do. And Baylor, I just think they're willing to go. I'm not guaranteed that they'll come out of that bracket, but I do like them. I think they're good. The Ohio State team, if you haven't seen that, Ohio State is really, really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Big Ten was off the chart this year. And Ohio State, the Liddell kid from, I think, Bellevue, Illinois, he's just dynamite. And so I think I love the Ohio State team.
All right. I always find brackets fascinating because people seem to forget every year that the Big Ten always does well in this tournament. The SEC always outperforms what people think they will do, and the Big 12 is usually a disaster. I mean, I just can't. I know we didn't have a tournament last year, but I'm just looking at this thing going, why? I'm so biased, John. I'm just telling you right now, I'm so biased. I always expect the SEC to be a surprise. When the Big 10 just rolls and starts kicking butt, people are like, oh, look at the Big 10. I'm like, well, no kidding. They do this every year. It doesn't mean they're going to win the title or whatever, but they do it, and the Big 12 disappoints. So is that real? I mean, do you expect that sort of thing to happen? And am I imagining that this has happened like the last 10 years?
No, it's real because of expectations. The SEC's reputation is changing year by year, and the expectations are probably changing. And I think that's how you overperform, is because nobody thinks about the SEC in basketball. But now this year, what's interesting though, Kevin, if chalk holds, as they say, if Arkansas plays Texas Tech to go to the Sweet 16, in that Midwest bracket, we could have Oklahoma State and Tennessee. So now you're going head to head back to the Big 12 SEC challenge. Obviously I'm an SEC guy. When I watch the SEC, I think there could be three or four Sweet 16 teams come out of the SEC. But it could be because can Arkansas beat Texas Tech? Can Tennessee beat Oklahoma State? Those are unbelievable matchups. That I think both leagues are very similar. Big 12 gets bigger, it's had a reputation, gets a little more publicity ongoing because of probably the leadership of Kansas year in, year out. But they've, you know, Baylor's done what they've done. Oklahoma State's been terrific this season. But I think if you go back to your this year, for this season, when we go back and look at this tournament, you might see a couple of these head-to-head matches, and that will decide, and a guy like you, that which league was better or which league outperformed the other. and it might be based on just a couple games to get to the Sweet 16.
All right, you ready to finish this up with some really weird stuff?
Yeah, you're the best at weirdness. Let's go.
I do it. Well, I'm I'll start with the appetizer, and I'll save the entree. Okay, here's the appetizer. Since you have the governor's number, could you call him and tell him to get this sports betting thing legalized in Missouri?
I would suggest it. Yeah, I'm not sure why he hasn't passed that one.
I what are they doing? It's free money. What in Kansas is the same way. They just keep saying they're going to do it, and then they don't. It's free money for the state. What are they doing?
You know, I can't answer what they're doing, but yeah, you might as well do it because a lot of people, you know, do it and make it legal and have fun with it. But yeah, obviously state by state is slowly but surely getting to that.
All right, here comes the meat and potatoes. I've asked you through the years if you would take a role at the University of Missouri or coach or whatever, and you said, I don't think so. But then you wound up being chairman of the board of curators at Mizzou. So clearly you're impressionable and you can be convinced into things. There's about to be an open Senate seat in Missouri that you would be a slam dunk to win. If they came after you to run, would you run?
No, I have not. Yeah, I chuckle because I haven't been called on that yet. I haven't heard that yet. I mean, I know there's a Senate seat open, but no, I haven't been talked about it yet, and I have not even, not till you asked that. That's a heck of an entree. No, I haven't really thought that. I think I like my life. Does that make sense?
I know, but Tommy Tuberville liked his, and there's all kinds of people that do this that like theirs, but they're also wanting to make sure that the seat is retained or whatever. There's, you know, there can sometimes be a higher calling. I'm just trying to gauge you here. I could do a little publicity work for you. I'd be on your staff. I could do whatever you want to do. I'll start this thing right now. I'm not kidding you. You would win that slam dunk, and I don't know anybody. Nope. I don't know anybody on the right side of the aisle that would argue that in the state of Missouri.
So I would ask you this, if you were my friend, right? Let's say you're my friend. Why would a friend even suggest that a person get into politics?
Well, I think there's two different ways to get in. The first thing is if you don't have anything you're worried about, you know, that happened in your background or whatever, you know, this is the real worry for most people that keeps people out. You know, you did something stupid in college, or, you know, you went to a frat party and wore blackface. Or if there's nothing like that, then you don't have anything to worry about there. I think there's two different ways to be in the Senate. We sit here in Kansas, and they're the quietest senators you've ever seen. You never hear from them. You know, this new Roger Marshall guy likes to go to Western Kansas and hunt. He's going to be low profile. Josh Hawley gets in there and wants to be a star. He's ambitious and wants to be something entirely different. I think it's almost like a part-time job. I'm sorry. It is. Being a United States Senator, you know, if you don't want to work 365 days a year, you clearly don't have to. And if you don't want to be high profile, you don't have to, but you could serve the people of Missouri very well.
You know, I'm saying no, because that has never entered my, never entered even a thought in my mind. And I'm sure if I walked in my house and said, honey, I've got an idea. Well, how about we stop that idea right now? We're doing just fine. And then, hey, Kevin, you never know what they dig out of your background or your family's background or your wife's family's background or your kid's background or your. That just seems like a business that's for certain people that need it.
I agree. And I think that's what keeps the best people out of it. And I think that's a big problem. Both sides. This is not political, Republican or Democrat. I think that's what keeps the best people out of it. I think the strangest people get into politics, and I think we repeatedly see that with some of the scandals and things that go on. We're like, we got oddballs there's a screw loose that makes them want to go do this, and they don't care if they're outed for, you know, whatever they've done their entire life or whatever. I think that's a bad part of the process, because I really think that some of these positions should be our very best people, and clearly it is not our best people.
No, and I agree with you. You wish that the very best, but it keeps the best out, just what we talked about. So when I was a curator, and there's changing six-year terms on the curator board. So you with different, there's nine members in state at University of Missouri. There can only be five from one party, and that obviously can change when you have a Democrat governor. He may put in, you know, you can only have five from a certain party. And I say this because with the nine people I served, and maybe there was a total of 12 or 13 over my 6 years of serving. Politics never was an issue, right?
Right.
So the reality was the governors that picked these people to do the best they could for the university. And when we met, whether it was in person, four times on campuses, or whether it was by phone, or whatever it was, politics wasn't the issue. It wasn't played. We may think differently politically, never was an issue. And when I think of that, what I'm telling you, that would be great if Washington was that way. And maybe for the most part it is, but that doesn't get the attention by all the news media. But that's what you're saying, is if you had great people that were in rooms and in chambers to make decisions for the best without any publicity leaning one way or the other, if they made the right decisions, then I think you'd have great people in those positions. I'm not convinced we have great people in those positions, but as we talked about, they open you up and they can make stuff up on you that probably wouldn't be, you know. Now, the hard part today is defending something that never happened.
That's exactly right, yeah.
And that'd be difficult because they don't give you time. They don't give you time or the platform to defend something, either that didn't happen or that happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that you go, oh, I forgot that was there, but here's what I meant. Well, you don't get that. You don't get that today.
Yeah. No, I've lived that. I know. But yeah, I know how competitive you are. And I just want to remind you, you would win.
Yeah, you're not guaranteed there either. I mean,
I think you'd win, John.
Now you have to travel and, you know, would it not be interesting to give a political speech? I might be too honest. That might hurt me. Although it could help me.
I think that would work in Missouri. Remember, it's kind of a local election. It's the state of Missouri. You might win with the highest percentage you've already won with ever. I mean, you played in the NBA. Think about the vote in Kansas City and St. Louis. You played in the NBA for 9 years, for crying out loud.
So you're saying that NBA thing helps.
I'm saying that if you ran in the state of Missouri for any kind of a statewide office, this would be at the federal level, but a statewide election, I'm saying that I can't think of the Missourian that you would not appeal to. I don't know who that would be.
Well, there's got to be quite a few out there.
I don't know these people is all I'm saying. You're right, because there's a whole bunch of different people in the world, but I don't know who they are. You've been in every town. You've been in every place in this state. You've been around forever. You've done great things. You've worked for the university. I mean, I think it's a slam dunk. I'm surprised nobody's mentioned it to you before me. I'm the first person?
Yes. Yeah, you are.
As soon as we're done with this, I'm going to call the Missouri Republican Party.
Well, I'll have you as a campaign manager, and then we'll be going.
You better stay away from me. You better keep me at arm's length, okay? Let's just be real here. You keep old Kevin at arm's length and just come on the podcast every now and then and thank your lucky stars that you're getting away with that.
But then look, they dig up who do you hang around with, who are your friends with, what radio show were you on. Yeah. Remember when that guy said that? What church do you go to? Remember when the pastor gave the sermon in 1994 on predestination and you were nodding in your pew? Yeah, no, you'd be like, now, if you were honest, you'd say, so what? Right? That was okay. I didn't mind it in 94 and I'm okay with it today. Just be honest.
I may not have to call the Republican Party of Missouri. I think the listeners of this podcast are about to do it.
Brother, you know what? I'd rather be just trying to find my ball along the creek somewhere and see if it's a red stake or a yellow stake or whatever it is.
Have you played Augusta?
I have not. No, I have not.
I think senators get right on there, don't they?
So now we're trying to put that positive negative paper in front of you.
You're
right?
Telling positive me one side negative. You're telling me on your bucket list is not to play Augusta.
You know, I haven't played it. So
right.
I haven't worked hard to get on. I screwed up when I worked for CBS.
Right.
I should have been able to play it. I just didn't. I didn't push. Could have played it because some of the guys played Monday fall in the tournament. But I wasn't. I mean, I wasn't either thinking along those lines or not. I didn't push the right button. I didn't go and say, hey, how do I get with that group that plays on the Monday afterwards? Because I probably could have, but I didn't. Well, I just didn't.
I've talked to Kevin Harlan many times. He says he can play it, but he doesn't play golf anymore and has no interest in doing it. And I just want to whack him in the head with a hammer when he says stuff like that. I'm like, come on, how about you go play it once and bring me with you? You know.
Well, and the best would be the Monday after the tournament because it's set up just like it was. Right, the greens would be fast as heck, and it'd be perfect.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. All right, John, I've taken way too much of your time, man. You are absolutely the best. This is as much fun as I've had. I've been doing this for 6 months. This was a blast today. Thank you so much about talking about so many topics, and all the best to you and your family, and go Mizzou. Let's go. I want to see Mizzou play Gonzaga. If nothing else, I just want to see that.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Yeah. It'd be fun for Mizzou fans, all of us. I mean, it'd just be fun. It'd be fun to see. Here's what Norm Stewart always said. Let's line up with the very best we can play, see how we do. Right, I mean, it doesn't hurt to give it a shot and go give it a chance. They'd be some nervous Mizzou people, but not as nervous. The first game will be nervous for Mizzou fans. Second game, you're playing Gonzaga, man, you just get to let it all hang out and see if you can win.
That sounds great. Thank you, John. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Kevin. Enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media, Incorporated.